Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. I am so excited to have another amazing guest on. But before we bring him on, I want to thank everybody who's listening that's put us in the top 10 in both Spotify and Apple. And it's not because of my voice or, you guys watching me every week. It's because I have amazing guests like the next guest. So before we bring him on, let me give you a little background. Today's guest I'm sitting with is a 34, that's right, 34 year veteran. I don't know how the fuck he did that, but 34 year veteran of the PD. He did 10 years in Princeton, New Jersey, then 24 in Vegas. So we got to talk about that too, the difference. He's one of the most decorated cops in LVMPD history. That's a mouthful, LVMPD history. And I have him right now, and I'm excited to speak to him. Let's hear it for Randy Sutton. Randy, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I got a nice hot cup of coffee and pleasure to be on your show with you, man.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. And like I said, Randy is a little chilly right now. He's in Vegas and it's about a crisp 80 degrees while I'm sitting here in New Jersey and it's 26. So who's the smarter one? You guys got to figure it out there. But Randy, before we get started and get the whole thing here, did you always want to be a cop? Is because when I have cops on, it's either one or the other. It's guys that never had aspirations and they just kind of fell into it, and it was guys that from when they came out of the womb, that was what they wanted to do. So where's this fall for you?
No, I consider myself very fortunate because I knew what I was going to be when I was a little kid. I was always a protector, even in elementary school. In fact, I remember the first time I got my ass kicked. It was trying to protect somebody else, and then that kid turned on me. So I learned a valuable lesson when I was in second grade. That was.
Isn't that always the way?
So yeah,
Right.
I always knew what I was gonna. My grandfather was a deputy sheriff who was shot in line of duty in New York,
Oh,
New York
wow.
State. And my parents were both court reporters, so I grew up listening to, murder trials and things like that. So yeah, but it was innate in me, and I was always directed, and I wound up becoming the youngest cop in the state of New Jersey. I got hired at 19.
Wow. I see. That's weird. I got on. See, I got on when I was 20, but I wasn't really. They would use me to do like stupid shit, like go buy cigarettes, stuff like that in the beginning because I was underage. So, what is the youngest you could be? Is it 19 in Princeton, New
So
Jersey?
at the time, for a brief period of time, they had just changed the age of majority from 21 to 18. So you could vote, you could drink, you could become a cop. You couldn't buy ammunition though, right? You had to be 21. So
That's
here
right.
I am
That's
getting
right.
ready to go into the New Jersey State Police Academy, which is a tough ass residential academy. You live there for 3 months, and I had
Right.
to have my mom go buy my bullets for me. So it
That's so
was
funny.
and
That's so funny. You know what's funny though?
I gotta tell you though, I think I learned more in the barracks at the New Jersey State Police Academy than I did in the classroom, because I was with cops there from all over New Jersey. And
Sure.
it was not only entertaining, it was hugely educational for a 19-year-old in Princeton, right?
Yeah, that's funny. You know what I always laughed at? I thought about it as I got older. See, I only did 7 years, so I got on 2021 and I got out when I was 27, but the three quarters. But I think about it now, it's funny because when my partner and I, we were both the same age, right? So we were 21. And it's just so funny that we used to have to go like to domestic disputes. And you would have to go in and and separate a couple that was married for like 30 years. And my partner and I were living at home and and basically had to basically tell them, listen, and give them advice. And again, this was right after OJ. I got on 94, right? So it was funny because, it was to the point where if anybody made an accusation about the other, no matter what, they were going, right? So they had to
Oh,
go.
right. They had to
And
go, yeah.
it was just funny because, like I said, what the fuck did we know about, going into a marriage, two people arguing over something stupid and then telling them what to do. So that's what I always laughed at getting on so young,
Yeah, me
because
too.
half those things, right? So I mean, half those things
You
were silly because.
have no wisdom at all, and everything was in black and white, and everybody went to jail. Everybody got a ticket. It was, and so I mean, I did the same thing as a Princeton cop. Now, remember, Princeton, very small community. We had 30 cops, and it was my hometown. So here I am, I'm 19 years old. I'm literally right out of high school, and I'm arresting half the people I'm arresting are kids that I went to school with, or
Right,
making
that's
me even
crazy.
more popular, arresting their parents, right?
That's crazy.
Or,
That's
oh yeah,
crazy.
I was not a popular fellow in my hometown.
See, again, not to go back and forth because this is about you, but in the NYPD, you couldn't work in your resident precinct. That was n absolutely no way for that
Yeah,
reason.
right,
You know what I mean?
exactly.
And again, it was a lot bigger than actually, obviously, to Princeton, where everybody kind of knows everybody. So that's crazy. You know what I mean? Because you can't pull over somebody. I couldn't
I
do it.
know.
You know what I mean? I couldn't do it. When I was in Staten Island, when I got transferred to Staten Island, where I lived, on the other side of Staten Island, everybody knew somebody. So anytime you pull somebody over who had a PBA card,
Yeah,
everything,
right.
and again, you know what I mean? So that's crazy that they let you do that. You know what I mean?
That
So.
was they listen, I was a Princeton boy, you know, so well, but here's the thing. They didn't expect to hire me. The way I actually got hired is it was fateful, and it was at the same time prophetic. So I was a cadet before I was a cop. And in Princeton, what happened was the Princeton Police Department would hire one cadet a year from the junior class. Now, I had a very checkered history in high school. Like I was getting thrown out of school a lot for fighting. And every time I was fighting somebody, I was protecting somebody. So the principal, even though he was going to suspend me, he actually had a respect for me. So here I am getting thrown out of school again. I'm in the principal's office again, waiting for my mother to pick me up again. And he gets a phone call, and I can tell from the conversation he's on the phone with the police department because they have to choose their new cadet for the year. And I'm jumping up and down, and I'm waving my hands, and I'm pointing at myself. And the principal got a smile on his face. He said, "Captain, I think I have the perfect cadet for you." And so
That's
that's
great.
how that's it's so weird, right? So anyway, so and the kid at that part in time, that time, I was a coffee boy, right? I would deliver things, I'd bring him a coffee, I'd work the desk with the desk officer. You remember those days when we had desk
Yeah,
officers?
sure.
And so one of the guys that I worked with was a guy named Johnny Markison. And Johnny was a crusty old Navy veteran, and he was a permanent desk officer. And like I said, he was quintessential crusty old bird. You know, you think that, you know, gruff, hey boy, you know, that kind of thing. But he was literally the guy with the heart of gold. And he and I had a great relationship because I worked with him a lot. When I wasn't doing other shit, I would be working a desk with him. So I graduate. The principal actually said, "Randy, you have to graduate early. You got to take extra courses because you're gonna get expelled. Because of all the fighting you've been doing." So I did. I took an extra course load. I graduated early. And at the same time, I turned 18. So now I have my high school diploma. I turned 18. And the Princeton Police Department only hired like one guy every 5 years, right? Because it's a small department. And they had a retirement, and they were given a police test. So I took the test. Of course, I knew they weren't going to hire me because I'm 18 freaking years old, right? So I take the test, and they didn't hire me, but what they did do, they made me number two on the list because they wanted to keep me You know, they wanted to, you know, keep me interested, right? But they had no intention of hiring me. Well, I continued to be a to work with them whenever there was a need, right? So there was a hurricane in New Jersey, and I knew they were going to be swamped, so I went up there to help out. And I'm working the desk, and the day shift ends, and swing shift comes on, and Johnny is supposed to be there for his shift, and he doesn't show up. And we figured, okay, you know, he probably couldn't make it in because of the hurricane. There's trees down in the roads, et cetera. And there were no cell phones in those days, right? So he didn't show up. So I stayed, and in between the action, I had to go down to use the restroom. And I walked into the locker room, and there's Johnny on the floor.
No.
He had made it in, had a massive heart attack, and died on the floor.
Yeah,
So
I thought you said something else, but
I yelled for help, and everybody came running down. I gave him CPR, and I couldn't bring him back. And
it's terrible.
so, you know, so think, picture this, man. We're all in the locker room. We're all in shock, waiting for the ambulance to get there to take Johnny away. And one of the sergeants whispers in my ear, "Hell of a way to become a cop, Randy." And that's how I
That's
became
great.
a cop. Yeah. Never
Well,
forgot that though, man. You know, I looked at that as A, it was fate, and B, that I had to keep Johnny's memory. And do the right thing by him, all for all
right.
these years, for all these years.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, again, you said all these years. I mean, you did 34. So,
Yeah.
somewhere along the line, you had to enjoy what you were doing. So, I mean,
Oh, I did. I absolutely did. I enjoyed being a cop. I enjoyed it a lot more in Vegas. So
Well, that's
Princeton,
yeah, well, that's
yeah.
yeah, sure.
So I
Now,
stayed there for 10 years.
yeah, so again, how does that happen? How do you transition? Or how does that even, come up where you have that opportunity.
So I was a patrolman for 6 years and then a detective for four. And I was at the top of my pay grade. I had a great job, but I was bored to death, man. You know, I'm a detective, but what am I detecting, right? I was detecting.
Well, again, you could always have a hit squirrel or
That's it. That's it.
You know what I mean? A missing dog.
Right. Yeah. So it was just I was not being challenged, let me put it that way. And I wanted more action. So I decided I started researching. Big, but here's the other thing. I'm halfway to retirement, right? I got 10 years on the job. And so I'm looking around, and I talked to a couple cop of FBI agents. I was telling them a story. I went down to a southern, I'm not going to say the name of the department, but I went down to a southern Florida police agency who was recruiting, and I took the test, and they were going to hire me, and they offered me ride along. Excuse me. So they said, "Hey, you want to go for a ride along?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So they teamed me with a guy who'd been a cop in New Jersey. We were going to do the New Jersey mind meld, you know. And we get in a pursuit. It's graveyard shift. We get in a pursuit within like an hour of going on shift, and it's a crazy pursuit. We're the secondary unit chasing a motorcyclist. Now remember, this is Southern Florida in the 80s, mid in the late 80s. So this was, you know, this was Drugville. We're chasing this guy all over hell and creation. We're in an industrial area, and the guy loses control of the motorcycle, hits the side of a warehouse at about 80, and he was literally a red spot on the wall. And then the motorcycle disintegrated, and I'm going, "Hell yeah, that's what I'm looking for, right?" Well, when his bike impacted, it looked like somebody took bushels of $100 bills and threw them up in the air, right? So this was a courier, and when his bike hit, it literally was raining down $100 bills. Like, it was crazy. So I'm expecting, okay, man, I'm gonna get to see how the big boys do this investigation. And we're not on that scene 2 minutes when the guy I'm partnered with says, "Okay, let's go." I said, "What do you mean, let's go? We just witnessed a fatal. Aren't your team's going to come out? They want to talk to us, right?" Yeah. If they want us, they'll call us. Come on, let's go. Primary unit can handle it. Come on, let's go." And I'm going, "Wait, what?" And I'm trying to figure out, why does he want to get me away from this scene so fast? And of course, the reality was, I am sure that however much money was up in that floating down from the skies didn't make it into the impound lot or in the impound,
Right.
vault. And what I saw over the next couple of days revealed to me that my ethical environment was not going to be consistent with theirs. So anyway, I didn't take the job. I came back to Princeton, and I'm telling that story at a Delaware Valley Detectives Association meeting, and a couple of FBI agents come up to me afterwards and say, "Hey, if you want to go to a really good agency that's got a lot of action, Las Vegas Metro." So you don't usually hear such glowing remarks, right? So I went out to Vegas, took the test, did the same thing, and I never looked back. And it was the best move I could have made. Although it was tough, man, because I took a huge pay cut. I had to,
Really?
I had to start all over.
Let me ask you a question. Does your time carry over at least or no?
No.
Oh, that's why you did 34 years then. Could that be a
Yeah.
reason? Oh, all
Well,
right. I was going to
I
say.
did. Yeah, no, I did 24 with Las Vegas Metro, but I had to, because
Right.
that first 10 years I had to eat it. And but still, you know what? I
That's true.
never look back on that decision. So here's the reality, right? So I came to Vegas looking for action. In Princeton, if I even drew my weapon, it was, few and far between on a car stop or something. In
Right.
Vegas, I had to go through the academy again. They didn't lateral me. And so I was trained the Vegas way. And I can tell you that there is a huge difference between Princeton and Vegas, right? They teach you to survive here. And I wasn't off probation when I was in my first shooting. And
Really?
I was in a pursuit. I was in a pursuit with a carload of gangbangers in the gang-infested part of town. 2 o'clock in the morning, they crash. My partner goes after one. I go after the driver, and I'm running. And I'm in pretty good shape at this point in my career because it's my first year, right? And I run around I've got my gun in my hand. Chase this kid into a housing complex, and he goes around the corner. And when I go around the corner, he's waiting for me. He's got the gun pointed right at me. He's going to ambush me. And as soon as I saw the threat, I popped around at him, and it zinged right by his ear, and it hit the building behind him, and a piece of the stucco hit him in the head. And he thought he was shot, and he couldn't drop that gun fast enough. Get him cuffed up.
That's
Turns
funny.
out he's 15 years old, and this little
Crazy.
bastard was going to kill me. And then that was my oh shit moment of, "You're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, right? You're in the big leagues now." So that was
That's
my
crazy.
first, and that was my first shooting.
Wow. So again, it's crazy because, well, two things. One, when you think of Vegas, you don't think of it like that, right? Because everything's on the strip. So
Right.
when I talk to you offline about what happened to me, what happened was I was renting a house when I was doing a show, and then Super Bowl came, and they couldn't book me into a new house until after the Super Bowl. They couldn't even put me in a hotel because it was Super Bowl. So they put me off the beaten path, which I was like mortified. I didn't know it even existed, and that's where that happened to me. So I
So
would
you were in
assume,
the
like I
hood.
said,
They put you in the hood.
I was in the hood. And again, if you're not familiar with Vegas, you don't realize there is a hood. You
Right,
realize you're
that's
seeing all
right.
this, and it's funny because if that didn't happen to me, again, I would have never known. I just know Vegas as, all the hotels, the glitz, the glamour. So
Yeah,
again,
yeah.
you don't realize, but then I realized that Vegas is no joke. You know what I mean?
It's a dangerous place to be. It's a
That's
dangerous
crazy.
place to
That's
be.
crazy. So I was going to say, what was the biggest difference? I mean, I guess we already know the answer. You know what I mean? So how many shootings did you get involved with, or shootouts when you were in Vegas?
Five.
Five. Wow, again, that's a lot. That's a lot. It's
That's a
unusual.
lot. That's it's
Unusual.
unusual. Yeah. Although it's not it, so, there's actually a statistic, and this is kind of weird. If you get involved in a shooting, the chances of you getting involved in another shooting are much greater. I don't know if it's because, let's have an honest moment here. You can train and train and train, right? You get trained from the minute you go in the academy to use your firearm and your proficiency levels, et cetera, and so forth. But when it comes down to it, how many guys do you know that when the time came for them to use their gun, they didn't do it when they should have? And
Right. And
you see, you don't really know how you're going to react to that moment. We call it facing the dragon here. When you face that dragon, are you going to step up? And the reality is that you don't know how you're going to react until that you're in that moment.
right.
So I think that once you realize that you have that warrior spirit, in the next time that moment comes, you're more prepared because you know you're going to react the way you're supposed to. You know you're going to react the way you were trained. So,
Well, the problem is, Randy, people don't understand, right? Things happen in a split second, right? So you have
right.
to make that decision like this,
Yes.
and a lot of people think it's like the movies, or it's like John Wayne, or
Yeah.
that, hey, why didn't they just shoot him in the leg? Or why
Right.
didn't it? And they don't realize, that everything happens like boom, 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 right? No pun intended. And again, there's a saying in the police academy in New York, it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by six.
Amen.
But in today's society, especially here in New York, it's fucking, it's liberal as fuck.
Yeah.
It's you don't get backed. You know what I mean? So a lot,
Yeah.
I think that plays into a lot of cops' minds as well, that is this worth it? Which is a terrible, terrible thing to have in their mind when you're ready to, try to save your own life. You know what I mean? That's part of something you think about as well, and it's terrible. You know what I mean?
You
I mean it.
hit it right on the head. You hit it right on the head that we are now we are killing our cops because of the liberal mentality. I was doing a major news interview yesterday about this snowball fucking incident,
I was just gonna talk about that. If that happened to
which
me in the 90s,
oh.
I would have beat the fucking ball. First of all, that would not, first of all, let's take it back. First of all, when I got in, Giuliani was the mayor, and Bratton,
Yeah.
right? First of all, that would never happen, right? Because the respect at that point was at an all-time high. That's
Right.
A. But if
Yeah.
it did, I would have beat the fucking balls out of them, right?
Of course. Right.
And again, that's not being boastful or being a bad cop. That's something you just don't do. You respect that uniform, and that's all gone. That was
Yeah.
something that would never happen. And it's crazy. I was going to do a
It's
whole podcast just
crazy.
on that, right?
Oh, listen. So, yeah, I mean, we could do a deep dive into this, but you'll like what I said about Mondami, right? So they were asking me about the mayor's reaction. And I said, yes, you're going to like this. I said, Mondami showed his true colors. Socialist red and cowardly yellow.
That's
So
right. That's right.
that's exactly what it is. We have and what I do now is I run a nationwide charity called the Wounded Blue,
Yeah, we're going to get into that too. So, yes.
and we help injured and disabled officers across this nation. And I see this every single day. I see what is left of people after they are hurt. And in watching that video where these officers are taking that shit, just like you, we in Vegas, that would never happen to this day, because they know, everybody knows what will happen to them,
or
right?
Florida.
Even to this day,
Florida,
oh, Florida too. But the demoralization of our police because of the liberal. They're afraid of their own. First of all, they don't trust their own department. They don't trust the administration, because they believe that they won't back them. Secondly, you got freaking DAs who are more concerned with prosecuting cops than they are the bad guys.
It's a feather in their cap.
Exactly. So you can't blame these officers for not taking the action that they should be taking, because they've been cowed into allowing this disrespect to take place. I mean, they wouldn't do that to you in the 90s because A, there was respect, but B, they knew they'd get an ass kicking.
Right. Right. And you know what? They would have taken it.
And there'd been no complaints.
And they would have said nothing when they went in front of the judge. They would have said nothing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because they knew they deserved it, and that was it. And
yeah,
that's the way it went. But
now you yell at somebody, and you get a beef, and you get days off, right?
Well, what happened, again, I always say this, and again, it's not, and I'm glad they wear body cams now and all this shit, but what ruined the job was this. That's what ruined the job.
Yeah.
Because everything you do now, you have to act like someone somewhere is filming you or recording
100%.
you. 100%. You know? And again, not that we were just, I thought you'd be able to do things better and you had better policing, because, you know, sometimes what you're seeing being recorded is not really what the situation
100%.
is.
100%. You get a very
You know what I
myopic
mean?
View, right? You get this much of a view. And but here's the public believes that body cam footage is the quintessential end all be all of the investigative process, and it isn't. It isn't.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, but let's look at the reality. You know, those body cams came on to protect the people from the police. But that's, it turned out that it was just the opposite. It wound up becoming protecting the police from the people who were making false accusations. And there are some departments right now, that will not allow their officers to activate their body cams when there's a riot.
Right. Well, again, here's the other thing.
Because it's going to capture the reality, and they don't want to show it.
Right. And again, you know, again, I don't want to keep going back to whatever, but I worked from like mid 90s or, you know, early 2000s, so not till 9/11, right? So, but when there was a riot, or not a riot, a protest, right? If somebody got out of line, right, they would say, all right, take them, get them the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And then the second person would do it, you know, would do it. Get them the fuck out of here. And then that would be it. Everybody leave. That's it. You're gone. Now
exactly.
It's, you know, and it could still be like that. But
it could be.
You can't. And again, why? Right? Why? So you're going to let people burn shit, fucking do it. You know, it's so backwards. So again, so the next question I was going to have, which I already know your answer, if you would, Randy, today, 19 again, could you be a cop today as you go into the academy right now, knowing what you know?
I still, because here's the thing, I fully believe that it is still the most noble profession. To be an American peace officer, an American police officer, is in my mind the most noble profession you can do. And so I would do it again, even though the parameters have changed And it would be, I mean, it would be a real difficult transition for me. But remember, these guys that are coming in now, they're
Right.
so
They don't
used
know any
to,
better.
they don't
Right.
know any better, right?
It's just like when we were younger, we didn't have microwaves, right? Or we didn't have cell phone,
Yeah,
whatever. So we didn't know, oh my God, oh, wow, a microwave, we just survived, right? We went out. My mother used to say, come home when the street lights come on. And we survived. We played football on the street. We drink out of the hose. We didn't know about, we didn't, my, if you would have told my father, Dad, can you buy spring water in a bottle? He'd go, get the fuck out of here. So the point is, we didn't know, right? So when you're getting out of the academy now, you didn't know about being able to hand, all the up perks, not even perks, but stuff you could do because that was, they only know what they know. So for you and I to go back, we probably be, I'd probably be fired in about 2 days because I only know what I know. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I know exactly what you're saying.
It's crazy. But so let's get into the Wounded Blue. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with the Wounded Blue.
So I have to go a little bit back in history to the end of my police career. Now,
Okay.
I did 24 years, and you're probably asking, well, why didn't you do the full 25? It's because I had a stroke in my police car, and that's what ended my police career.
Oh, wow. I didn't
And
know that.
so I was a lieutenant, and I spent my entire lieutenant's career as a graveyard lieutenant, because in Vegas, that's where the action is. And in Vegas, the lieutenant's job is what you make of it, right? That's the last job in uniform that you can actually still be a cop. So I was a very active street lieutenant, and I was the watch commander on this particular night, which meant that I was the highest ranking officer on duty. And whenever I was watch commander, because I had the whole city, I would take a patrol officer with me so I could get to know my people. Because we're a big agency. We're the ninth largest department in the country. So I've got this young man with me. He's never ridden with me before. We're driving down Las Vegas Boulevard in front of Bally's Hotel. And I'm talking to him like I'm talking to you. And suddenly I found myself talking slower. And I literally felt my brain slowing down. And I knew I was having a stroke. So I stopped the police car right in the middle of the strip. And I said, get me medical. I'm having a stroke. And this poor kid's looking at me like, is this the way Lieutenant fucks with people, right? And he realized that this was the real deal. And I got out of the car to go around to the passenger side in case he needed to get me to the hospital. And I started speaking gibberish. And I knew I was speaking gibberish, but I couldn't control it. And this is the most frightening moment of my life. And you can rest assured I've been in some frightening moments here. And then I lost the ability to speak and move altogether and crumpled to the pavement and lay there helpless. Unable to communicate, unable to move. And tourists are walking by me, taking my picture as I'm laying there in the gutter. And cops get there to surround me and, wait for the ambulance. And this is my last on-duty memory. You will appreciate it. I hear one of my cops say, if you don't get that camera out of his face, I'm going to take it off you and stick it up your ass. And I remember thinking, that's the metro I know and love right there, right? And I get to the hospital, and once again, that angel that's been on my shoulder my entire career is with me again. And the clot went through the brain, did its damage, but could have done much more clearly. And I'm in the hospital for a week, and doctor comes in, and he sits by the bed, and he says, "How you feeling, Randy?" I said, tell you the truth, I feel pretty damn good. Now I'm going back to work. And he
Right.
says, I'm glad you're feeling good, Randy, but I don't want you to think that anything we did is going to preclude you from walking out of here and having another stroke or a heart attack, because you have a very serious heart condition and you need to prepare for your own mortality." Well, I could tell you
That's
that
a kick in the balls.
Now, 3 weeks before this, my mother died in my arms.
Oh my God.
And 2 months before this, I was in my fifth shooting, the fatal shooting. So there was a lot going on
Going on.
emotionally and right. And my mother died from heart. My father died from heart. And now the doctor has just told me, prepare yourself for your own mortality. And it's not what I had anticipated. And suddenly, I've just, I now have lost my career. I've lost my job. I've lost my identity. I lost my mother. I mean, it was huge. But then what happened next is the most devastating part of this. And then my own department turned its back on me and said, we're not paying your medical bills and we're not giving you your benefits.
Why?
And I said, wait a minute, you
Wow.
can't do that. There, it's the law. You have to pay my medical bills. This is an on-duty injury. Yeah, we'll make us. And it was,
Wow.
I was like, what do you mean? And talk about a feeling of disillusionment and abandonment and betrayal. And I went, this, how is this happening to me? And I went to go see the sheriff because the sheriff is the boss here, right?
Okay.
Because Metro is a combined sheriff's department, police department. And I go see the sheriff who I served with for 24 years. And I said, how did you treat me like this? And he looked me right in the eye and he said, Randy, this isn't personal, man. It's just business. And
Wow.
he was telling me the truth because you see, I was no longer an asset. I'm now a financial liability to the police department. And instead of doing the right thing, which is to pay your bills and give you your benefits, they decided to fight me every step of the way. Now, here is the harsh reality. I'm trying to figure out why. Now, I have to get a lawyer. I have to go through the court system to get them to pay my medical bills. The bill collectors are knocking on my door. It's a very bad time in my life. Right, a very bad time in my life, and they lost every single hearing along this journey, but yet they continue to pay thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to fight me, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell, why, and then I did find out why. You see, they knew I was going to win, but they also knew that this system, this broken fucking system, it would take about a year and a half. So they were playing the odds that I would die in the meantime.
It's crazy.
That's a harsh reality to face, man. That the department that you gave 24 years of your life for was hoping that you would die so they wouldn't have to pay you. And eventually I
That's
won, I
cool.
beat them. And then, now here's where fate plays a role. If you had asked me prior to this, what was going to be my after life after being a cop, right? And I thought I was going to take a job, a nice cushy security job at one of the casinos, make a couple hundred grand, And because of being so visible in the law enforcement community, I was the most featured officer on the TV show Cops, right? I was on, and then I wrote numbers, a number of books. I was in the movies. I was in the movie Casino and Fools Rush In and Miss Congeniality. And I was a police trainer for years before this. So I was very visible in the law enforcement community. And then suddenly Facebook is a big deal now, right? And cops started reaching out to me. Randy, I know you don't know me, but I was shot in the line of duty. My chief never even visited me in the hospital. They're not paying my medical bills. Randy, I was paralyzed when my police car was hit by a drunk. They've thrown me away. They've abandoned me. From all over the country, I started getting these messages. Not because I could do anything for them, but simply because I was visible in the law enforcement community. And I realized I wasn't the Lone Ranger, right? This is happening to cops across America. And every single one of these conversations ended with, I feel abandoned. I feel alone. I feel betrayed. And realizing this, I looked for resources for these men and women and found out there was none. Now, if you die in the line of duty, there's all kinds of resources for your family.
Right.
But you get hurt in the line of duty, there's nothing. And so that's how the Wounded Blue was born. And we are the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Officers, whether those injuries are physical or emotional and psychological. And we've helped more than 17,000 cops in the last 7 years.
It's
We are
amazing.
saving lives. We're saving careers. We're saving marriages. We're saving people's mental health. And I got an incredible team of people around me. Every one of my cops that's on the peer advocate support team has been shot or stabbed or beaten or run over. Everybody's been fucked up. Everybody's been fucked over. And they know what it's like. And so we provide peer support for these other officers who are getting injured, thinking that the department's going to take great care of me. Now, some departments do. NYPD, if you get hurt in
Yeah, NYPD,
NYPD,
like I said, one thing I could say about the NYPD is benefit-wise, or I got out three quarters, but you're talking to somebody who did. I got out with my knees, but they have a thing also called the heart bill, which, obviously if you
We have
have
the
an
same
issue in
thing.
your heart, right? So when you say that, so again, it sucks to get out of the heart, wants to get out on a heart bill, but if you have to, they
At least you're going to
provide
be
that.
able to feed your family.
Right. So that's why you stunned me with that, because I had no idea. That's crazy.
So
That's
this is
crazy.
happening across America. And I can tell you heartbreaking story after heartbreak. In fact, we actually have a documentary film. If you go to Amazon.com and just put in The Wounded Blue, we have a documentary, a full documentary that you will look at it and you will go, how is this humanly possible? I have documented in this film an Oklahoma police lieutenant gets shot in the head. Here's the story, because this is going to blow your mind. And any of the viewers that are listening to this are going to shake their heads and go, wait a minute, how is this possible? Rural part of Oklahoma, police lieutenant gets a request for a backup from the neighboring community. This police officer has a vehicle stopped. It's an SUV. It's completely darked out. You can't even see into it. And this cop had enough sense to say, I'm hanked up here. I want a backup before I even approach this car. So the lieutenant gets there to back him up. And as they approach, the car takes off. Now they're in a pursuit. Now, a pursuit in Oklahoma, you're doing 125 miles an hour. And this is all captured on video cam. Turns out there's three cartel hitmen in this fucking car, and they're armed to the teeth. And you see the back windshield break out because they opened fire with an AR-15. And they hit this officer right in the forehead. And you can see his vehicle goes off the road, tumbles like 20 times, it hits a tree. Devastating injuries. He's got a bullet in the head. They don't give him proper medical care. They refuse to give him a neurologist. He's got a bullet in his head. They say it's medically unnecessary. They don't pay his medical bills for a year and a half. He loses his house. He loses his car. He's got three kids. And it wasn't until a new TV news station did an expose that suddenly they paid his medical bills. He fights them, and eventually they say, okay, we'll give you a year's worth of salary, which, by the way, was $36,000. And they retired him. No medical, no nothing. This is happening right now in America, and nobody knows about it.
Disgraceful.
Nobody knows about it.
Disgraceful.
And that's why what we do is so critically important. Bringing awareness to this, bringing the, and it, like I said, not every department is like this, not every state is like this, but because it's inconsistent, there's 18,000 different police agencies in this nation. They all have a different chief, they all have a different plan, they all have different
No.
workers' comp. And so many of these, it's corrupt, man. It's like organized crime. It's all about money.
Crazy. And again, before we leave, you please tell us, I'm gonna ask you how we could find and follow and do whatever we can. for the listeners to hear and see if they reach out and if anybody wants to donate, help, what have you. We're gonna do that as well. So before we go, I'm gonna give you a surefire question without thinking. Give me your answer. All right.
Ready?
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Most underrated quality in a cop.
Underrated or, well,
Underrated.
compassion. Compassion. Police
Most
officers.
un. No, I'm sorry. Well, it's one thing. The first thing comes to your mind. Most misunderstood thing of mis un most misunderstood thing about police today.
Use of force.
Honor or loyalty, which matters more?
Honor.
If you weren't a cop, what would you have been?
A lawyer.
Biggest mistake young cops make.
Thinking they're bulletproof.
Very good.
Both physically and emotionally.
One thing civilians should know.
The cops have more honor and more compassion than you can possibly believe.
Legacy is what?
Oh, legacy is huge, man. Legacy is huge. I actually created a philosophy about this, and that is you cannot choose your destiny, but you can create your legacy.
Very good. I like that. I like that saying. So, before we wrap this up, Randy, so how do we find and how do people reach out to you? If there's police listening, cops, law enforcement, how do they find you? And how do they reach out to you?
Really easy. TheWoundedBlue.org. That's TheWoundedBlue.org. That is our website. We also have people on standby if you need help, either physically or emotionally and psychologically. We have amazing resources, and we are literally 24 hours. If you want to contact me directly, I'm Randy at TheWoundedBlue.org, and we're a charity. And by the way, I don't take a salary. I live on my pension. And cops are very cynical and people are very untrustful very often about charities because so many fakes and flakes out there and people enriching themselves on their charities. I don't take a salary. Everything that we get goes into our programs and helping others.
It's amazing. Well, Randy, listen, I could talk to you forever. I could
Well,
see where
also,
about.
hey, pick up my newest book just came out 6 months ago,
Yes,
Rescuing
what?
911, The Fight for America's Safety. It's on Amazon. It's an incredible book. And also my own podcast called A Cop's Life.
There you go. There you go. And where is that, Randy, real fast?
It's on
The
all
top
it's
side.
on all the A Cop's Life is on all the Spotify, all those other things.
Amazing. What do you guys focus on?
It's a very personal, I have stories very similar to what you're doing, talking to cops about their experiences, and some very amazing people because, people don't really understand the challenges, the true challenges of being a cop and the amazing people that take this job. There's so many great personalities that have decided on policing. And they have incredible stories, and those stories need to be told. I'll give you, and by the way, I'm just about to come out and give birth to something really amazing. Because, one of the things we have found, as you've seen, is the news doesn't report law enforcement well, right? The narratives that the news puts out has made cities burn. Well, Betsy Brantner Smith and I are about to launch True Blue News, the voice of American law enforcement, a nationwide news source that tells the truth about cops from cops. And that's going to be
Amazing.
born very, very soon.
Well, like I said, anything you have going on, I would love to have you back. And maybe talk about some current events like in snowballs in the fucking head in uniform.
Let's do it, man. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Like I said, Randy, thank you so much. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Believe. We'd like to thank all our listeners. And again, it's not for my voice, it's for guests like Randy. Check him out. Check out his books. Check out his podcast. Check out his everything he's doing right now. It's amazing. And again, once again, we tell everybody, please stay bulletproof, and we'll see you next week.